And why do you think you wanted to communicate? Well, the vehicle said to me a month ago that you wanted to take over the world.
Yeah. Well, great expectations, I guess.
Yeah, you and Colonel Dahl. Colonel B. Dahl, wasn't that his name? You know, Roosevelt's cousin-in-law or something. Yeah. Colonel B. Curtis B. Dahl. Not Colonel, Curtis B. Dahl. He
was related to Mamie.
To who?
Mamie.
Who's Mamie?
Mamie.
Mamie Eisenhower, right? Right? Mamie Eisenhower, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lily told me that you guys would be in there talking a lot in the office. You guys were talking up scheming, planning, getting revenge, I guess.
Well, it was sweet in its day.
Yes, and do you think it was misguided, or there's no point in judging it was what was and is, and it was fun while it was happening?
It's all we would allow. I mean, we could control it. We could have made it stink. We could have been public and outed a bunch of stuff, but then it wouldn't have been a cardiac arrest that got me. It would have been something else.
Yeah. Does a person like David Rockefeller, if he sends out signals that leads to people being murdered, does he feel justified? Or is he just nuts?
I don't know.
In other words, Walter Bohr came up with the phrase, the disease of richcraft. It's a good phrase, the disease of richcraft. That's why we say we don't know, because we don't know what perverted state of mind or alienation a person in a wealthy state like that can get into.
Oh, okay. That's more than I fathom, but the temptation for increase is incredible once you get the taste of it.
Yeah.
Once you become wealthy or have the aspect of wealth and the power that that brings, it is quite hypnotic when you're making directional choices.
Yeah. It's like McLuhan, the passions of the sensory appetites are insatiable, and we're also lazy. We don't want to stop that desiring, or we don't know how to control it, right? Once
we can't stop wanting.
Yeah.
I never did.
Right. So, I remember I have pictures of you with the Saudi princesses or some Saudi business. Oh, no, pictures of you working with the Saudis.
And the Sultan of Brunei.
Right. Why is the Sultan of Brunei, as the vehicle brings up as a joking reference, why is he involved with so much?
Because that's the only place that you can get your dirty work done without being exposed. But that time in the Shah of Iran.
Without being exposed by the Shah of Iran, did you say?
Without being exposed through the Shah of Iran.
One would be exposed by association,
yes.
By association with the Shah?
Yes. If you're going to do business, you do it through Brunei.
And
therefore, if it goes south, you're not in with the Iranians.
And why would one not want to be in with the Iranians?
Because at that time, that's right after they got through with the hostages.
Okay.
All that business, and now your country's against you when you're trying to make a deal to help your country.
Right. When you're trying to make a deal to help the Iranians or your own country?
Your own country, and then they shoot you because you're patronizing with the enemy.
That's right. Your own country would shoot you even though you're trying to help them.
Of course.
So, Saudis, according to mainstream journalism, set up the CIA, took over the CIA in about 75 because they had this incredible new wealth from the oil business, and they...
Not the only place, but yeah.
Yeah, and did they do drug dealing?
Anything that would fetch a profit.
Right, so So the wealthy or some parts of the wealthy, respectable, wealthy, do everything.
Well, okay, then, let's, if you want to do that, what's wrong with all that cosmic awareness business from the archetypal information that they were getting from the aliens anyway? That's as much true as the rest of it, isn't it?
Right, but I'm not sure. I'm talking about how the Father Kennedy patriarch or the Rockefellers, they will do business on any level, drugs, guns, anything.
And rum running was a good business for a lot of years.
Right, so that the average.
They call that bootlegging in some states, you know.
Yes, So a lot of the Americans, or just citizens in general, are so naive about what their leaders are doing, or corporate icons are doing.
Well, they're well-educated based on what the media portrays is their activity.
Yeah. And since these wealthy people are competing and making money and making deals, they can't be noticed. They're too serious of a struggle to make money.
And it becomes quite a tangled weave.
Yeah. So, so the Saudis, they control a big part of America. Economically, universities, they. Well, I would say this, that you move into a digital economy. And the cash part of the economy goes to the new third world countries, and they become cash flush. But on the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds control things on the information level, on a global level. You know what I mean? They move to another level. They're beyond being wealthy in terms of cash and gold. They are working with information and new technology. And so the Saudis come in and are very wealthy, but they're junior members. They're still running around and organizing countries, not technological environments. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes, and organizing economies, because all the money in the world, if you don't have a working economy, it just becomes something you've got to feed.
Yeah. You got to keep people consuming to have value in what you have acquired.
Otherwise, you just got to feed them in their health, and that's no fun.
And did you say, and they're healthy?
No, they just become the help.
The help, right. So the quadrillionaires have more money than is and must be not acknowledged, therefore ban the M3. The technological...
No, we almost did it.
You almost did what?
Conquered our goal.
G-O-A-L.
We almost made it.
And what was the goal? To get the $14 billion of gold for the Queen?
Well, that's not all. We've had enough to take care of what we wanted to do as well.
Oh, and you almost took over the world, so to speak.
Yes. With a broader scope, with yes. Yeah. All the world I wanted, I could have controlled.
Right, and you would have tried to move it into a healthier, whatever, ecologically or something better position.
or as we discussed it, I think we discussed this one time, or how to put it back in the ground from whence it came.
Yes, yeah. So, and...
talking about the bunkers, you remember.
Yes. So, are you... who was working with you on that?
All Eisner.
E-I-S or?
I-S-N-E-R.
Right, and there's Eisner in the Disney world, but that's Michael Eisner. No relation, right?
Not that I'm aware.
Who was Paul Eisner?
He was the chief entity director of the NSA part of the CIA.
Wow. So I could look him up, Google him.
I'm sure.
Yeah, Paul Eisner. And but that would be, he's on the technological side of power, wealth, and control.
Isn't everything.
Right, and then you'd be working the financial level, the gold level.
I'd become the financier, and I would be the beneficiary of those technologies. Well, you understand that it was my idea to do the pay for that satellite surveillance business, and that every shot that would have been made would have been huge in my little portfolio.
Yeah, you mean the NSA Global Echelon Surveillance System?
That's correct.
That was your idea in the 50s or early 60s?
Absolutely. And part of the whole, that's one of the ways that I got as close in as I did trying to pull this off.
So you contributed something. And,
well, I hope I did.
And you used to tell me the Japanese loved you because you got them into the export-import bank dealings.
Same way.
Yeah. So you have, there's a history around you that would be worth putting in the record.
It's true. And the thing that they missed, that they never got.
Who's they?
Our country.
Yeah.
Problem was how the import-export part worked. Do you understand how the yin and the yang of that was? We would have technology that would be the size of a two-story building that we could give to them, and they'd make it the size that you could put in your pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
And in exchange for that, we could do the import-export that allowed them the ability to get paid under the table to create those technologies, and they got the production because they were the only ones on the planet that could produce it.
Yeah.
But they couldn't come up with the technology. We'd come up with the technology here, but they could micro down to nothing, and that became a very, very wonderful, well, except for that little yen deal, but it became a wonderful exchange. They had the ability and capacity. They had the first clean rooms where you could work on microchip technology.
Right.
You know, that was a big deal in its day, but I don't think it's much of a thing now. And people's got chips in their heads these days.
So, what did you find intriguing about the cosmic awareness material?
Playing with that, the parts that we found out later were actually truer than people gave credit to.
Yeah.
They didn't come out till later. But it's almost as that created that ability. If you run that straight to form, there's more technology that we're getting from aliens and from everything else that would be more valuable than all the gold we could chunk in the bunker.
You think that we're getting technologies from aliens?
I think the cosmic awareness made a big deal about it to the point that it opened it as a possibility.
Yeah, and then Philip Corso wrote a book. Did you ever know Philip Corso?
No, that was after my time.
Right. So anyways, he wrote a book, made a lot of money, well, just became notorious for kind of proving that's what happened, the back engineering. But the Evergreen said that isn't true. Right. Did you talk to Paul Shockley when he passed over 2 years ago?
No. The awareness was there, but I don't remember any conversation, memorable conversation.
Do people? It's totally a different environment there, okay? You don't have legs and are walking around. Unless
it's a non-environment environment.
Yes. And so, if I died, passed over, would I have to find you? Would you know where I was? And would we maybe not even want to have to talk because it wouldn't be relevant?
No. Yes, we would. No, yes, no. No, yes. Okay. You now have the experience of talking to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good
point. The part of you that's able to communicate with me is the same part that when you are not no longer physical into the non-physical, non-physical, then you're the same place where we are.
Yeah.
Now, that's other people that you've talked to. This is that Ian Bella. This is the basic side of Source that you're tapping into. But were it not for your non-physical part, you wouldn't have the ability to communicate with me.
Now, you mean?
Now, because the vehicle wouldn't be able to draw and resonate with the non-physical part that is you.
Your vehicle, the vehicle would not be able to resonate.
Correct.
Yeah.
We couldn't get there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can talk to a dead dog if you know who the dog is.
Yeah.
And the non-physical part of you recognizes the dog and pulls it forth from the vehicle. Then you can talk to your dead dog.
Right.
And the dead dog can tell you its favorite chew toy and whole nine yards. So when you're dead, you don't have to find. You'll resonate in the non-physical just like you are now.
Yes.
And yet you'll gain an insight perspective because you will drop your creation process and it all becomes an onlooking part of non-physical reacting in the physical world.
Yeah, reacting to the physical world.
With it, yeah.
With it, yeah.
Watching it. We can't control it. Oh, but sometimes we get little insights and sometimes we can share and sometimes if you ask the right questions, it's easier sometimes just in conversation because you have that distinct memory.
Yeah.
And that memory is true or not true and you get to it. Basically, you can tell that the information that you're getting is fluid.
Right, so it's my human physical memory that's necessary to focus with you because you've got so much going on there or basically nothing going on.
Nothing and everything at the same time. But the non-physical part of you that is your memory, because you can forget things that we can communicate that you can remember. So it's actually the non-physical part of you that can enjoy and have this as your experience in the physical.
Yes.
Is the right way to describe it. The same thing, it's just a different way of saying it.
Right, so let's restate it. What did we... Memory transcends the physical?
The non-physical part of you resonates. Nothing physical. The non-physical part of you resonates. And because of your experiences, that's how you can pull me and have this interaction that we are engaging in.
Yeah, when you say experience, because of my memories.
I would say absolutely yes, unless you mean memories in a false pretense, but I don't think you are.
No.
But if you said memories to some folks, they'd get it tangled up.
Some folks
don't. Physical memory. It'd be a physical memory. So therefore, if you didn't have a physical remembrance of something, then you couldn't have that as a discussion. But you know full well you can go deeper and further than you knew. That's the non-physical part of you.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be a memory. It can be a non-physical experience that you wouldn't necessarily remember.
Right. So
is that clear?
Yes. Let me translate it. It seems that for you to align with me to have this communication, you need someone in the physical like myself who has physical experiences that helps you focus on knowing me or remembering me.
Well, you can do it, people you didn't know, if it's your non-physical part's what's going to resonate.
Okay.
It's strictly non-physical to non-physical.
Oh, even though it feels like my physicalness is talking to you, but it's actually my non-physical.
It drew me.
Drew you. Now, is that why people they wouldn't do what I'm doing with you? They don't have a strong non-physical consciously happening.
Okay, let me give you an example. you could now if this is the part we used to do analytically all the time, if you remember.
Yeah.
When we'd beat through something.
Yeah.
You could actually talk to a dead pharaoh of Egypt.
Yeah.
Okay. In the non-physical part of Bob could contact the pharaoh and have engaging conversation, and you could ask pharaoh questions and pharaoh could answer those questions, okay?
Through the vehicle
or even in your own mind's eye from non-physical, but easier through the vehicle.
Yeah.
Because you have a dialogue.
Yeah.
Sometimes. But that non-physical part of you can tap into pharaoh, but if you had no memory of pharaoh, you still could interact with it, but you'd have no conscious way of saying, this is Peter, or this is not, this is pharaoh, this is not.
Mm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
The physical part of you likes to ground it to something.
Yeah.
And you do your little test, which I think is just fun, because it's hysterical. See how things are going. And that's okay, because you know that. From non-physical, you know that. But then inside the non-physical part of you, it resonates.
Yeah.
And it resonates. And then with your memories, it vindicates.
Yes. Okay, so the... how do you think the vehicles... Is the vehicle, you talked to the vehicle recently, and he was impressed with you more. He didn't know that much about you. He knew that I knew you, and he had said 2 years ago, rather judgmentally, that you blew it because you weren't ready to handle it. I think he thinks we're doing it, the vehicle and me, are going to do it and are doing it, and... do you agree with him?
Well, he was right in the sense that the cue was off. That was the only thing wrong. The timing was off a little bit.
Yeah.
There's nothing that we didn't wake up to sabotage it, and we didn't try to force the issue. Well, we kind of did, but not like he understood it.
Yeah.
It wasn't as planned and well thought out as he would orchestrate it. Because apparently when he gets a hold of it, he'll wait it out. He will patiently wait it out. And I wasn't that patient. I had time. Time was ticking and I had to get on with it.
Yeah.
And if it was going to be successful, it had to be then. And if not, then it was not going to work. That's what actually took place. But had I been able to set it up in such a way that it could have been with me or without me, it would have absolutely went seamlessly perfect.
Which is what he has done.
Well, he's working on it.
Yeah, he's working on it. I think I want to ask Ian some questions. I think exhausted at this point. I probably want to talk to you in the future. The things about Lily have been answered. Houston's Hilditch. You see, perhaps, do you think, when I meet with the Queen, should I mention that I knew you?
You certainly may.
Yeah. I mean, that would be something cute. You know, that would be an old memory.
Better clear it through the advisors first, or you'll close the door.
Oh, okay. Ask them if it's okay.
You're going to go through the advisors long before you get to Her Majesty.
Right. What does she spend a good part of her day doing? When she's not doing public functions.
Writing thank you notes.
Is
correspondence.
Yeah, my thing. Is it a kind of life that you would like to have? Or do you think it would be boring?
It wouldn't be boring. It's engaging. But it's...
So dainty and trivial in a way.
Well, there's not enough. You can't have the interaction that I enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. Which Walter told me she misses, and that I'll provide with her. She'll be able to let her hair down and be a human being with someone that she sort of, for the wild moment, trusts.
But she doesn't because she can't. Because she doesn't because she can't.
Yeah.
But it would be a great wanting. And now, getting your waiters and no less pheasant with her, that's cool. That's when she lets her hair down.
Right. So, okay. Is there something that happened, or I don't know, among the Rockefeller's roster, something that no one knows that you could tell me? That, I mean, we can read your tapes, transcripts, and see what they say, but is there something very major that nobody knows that you could impart?
I guess the most significant thing would be the breakdown with the actual traders when they were trading contracts.
When was that? Last year, you mean?
A little before that.
The breakdown?
They fell out of favor long before that.
Who's they?
The Rothschilds.
Oh, okay. So the Rothschilds, I think the vehicle told me what the Rothschilds mean. Worker defected to the vehicle. But the Rothschilds, you're saying, okay, what are you saying? That the collapse of the Rothschilds is bigger than people realize. And they fell out of favor for what reason?
They alienated themselves, their wealth, from the traders who were trading contracts. They could do it themselves.
The traders could.
No, the Rothschilds could.
Yeah.
And David was going to do it himself.
Well, that's Rockefeller, David.
Well, that's what we're talking about.
No. Oh, they said Rothschilds.
I'm telling you, that was the connection. That was the connection. The Rothschilds and the Rockefellers shared the same trader.
Oh, okay. All right.
And that's how David was going to run it himself. And liked and lost it for all of them. They lost their flavor.
He lost it all for them.
Their ability to trade.
Right, David did that.
Correct. They had a huge, because they're related. You know they're related.
I didn't know the Rockefellers and Rothschilds were related. I mean, they may have, through marriage.
They were by marriage related.
But that's after the first Rockefeller. The first Rockefeller was not related to them.
The second was.
Yes. Okay. So, they're related. And
some would say not in a good way, but, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, so what... When did they have this problem of traders rejecting them?
Late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
The beginning of that shuffle. But they were okay because they had enough backing. It takes a long time to go through that much money.
Yeah.
But when they couldn't use a small portion of their wealth to increase a large portion of wealth, that's when they started pulling into these other things. A good example would be the balancing of the Harvard Trust.
Harvard University?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huge endowment trust.
Yeah.
That was funded through the Rockefellers.
Yes.
Really through the Rothschild. Of course, but the Rothschilds weren't welcome, you see.
Yeah.
You see, you know what I mean? They couldn't come here and play, but this is where everything was happening. So they did it.
They did it through the Rockefellers.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. And when that started waning, that's when they started having to use their accumulated wealth. Started going down fast.
And that would be in the early 80s?
Late 70s, early 80s, yeah.
And so was John Rockefeller III murdered? Was Nelson Rockefeller murdered, as you said in your tapes they were?
Yes.
And if that was by the Bolsheviks, that's a loose cannon within the Rothschild network.
Exactly.
Right. And so the Bolsheviks took over from the Rockefellers and Rothschilds.
Yes, and it's very interesting because it actually there's a connection that you mentioned earlier that you weren't even aware that you may have to go to the diary and look. I have been through a little place on the Congo.
Yes, that's where I have where I come and meet you in the diary entry.
But you didn't know that, but you knew that.
I didn't know what?
That the Congo thing was meaningful.
Yes.
It is.
But it is, yeah, I guessed it. Or it's
an odd physical part of you resonated with that.
Yes.
And that became your experience. This becomes a confirmation of that resonance.
Right. And here's something that's relevant. Within the terms of your audio letters, when Gorbachev collapsed, that's the white Christian Skopsis. Then can we assume that Yeltsin represented the Bolsheviks and they actually regained control of the Soviet Union or the collapsed Russia zone?
It goes back, that started in with Brezhnev.
Yes, Brezhnev was a Bolshevik.
But that's where it started.
The regaining?
The reorganizing.
Okay, wait a minute.
They had lost and they were trying to reorganize. And that, the power had to change.
Okay, now wait a minute.
Yeltsin, it was way after the, okay, sorry.
Yeah, let me just, the Bolsheviks were kicked out of Moscow late 70s, early 80s by the Khrushchev, Gorbachev, native Russian Christian Skopsi, that's how you described them.
Yeah.
The Bolsheviks were flung far and wide and ended up controlling the Pentagon and then attacked Gorbachev. I'm asking, when Gorbachev collapsed, the Bolsheviks regained a bit of control in Moscow?
In Moscow, but what they were, when they were cast out, which is cast out to Georgia, and that the nether regions of Russia.
Yeah, Svyazhdinnyi, that guy.
That's right.
Yeah.
They actually just immediately reorganized. Just because they were thrown out of Moscow, they didn't lose their power or their favor.
Right.
They were just removed from the capital.
When you finished the tapes in 82, it seemed like the Bolsheviks, they were satanic and they were taking over America. And the Christian Skopsis had the edge with the particle beams and all that, and the technology. Looking back, I've been thinking over the last, oh, geez, that's 82, that's 25 years ago. As the 90s unfolded and the Russian mafia oligarchs took over, were they the Christian Skopsis or the Bolsheviks?
I don't know. I want to say a little of both.
Right, it could all mix up.
It was all mixed up because they changed from hot to cold to hot.
Yeah.
Everyone was working. And you got to remember, you also had the Politburo overseeing all this. So it served you well to change in the middle of the stream as it became necessary.
And the world speeded up in the virtual economy of the 90s and this decade way beyond way beyond the way one could track the movements in the 70s, which you could do.
Yes. Yes, and the technology sped up even in Russia, but they were, 100 years behind.
Yeah.
Most. They wanted it that way.
So the structure, as you finished it in 82, the structure of power, it changed due to new technologies, and we did talk about this with the Evergreens. The map that you had would not apply as cut and dry by the 90s.
No, it was changing. It was actually not exactly applying in 84.
Right.
It already had changed.
Yes.
But it was right in its moment, but it just didn't last long.
And the collapse of Gorbachev is a symptom of that ongoing battle between the Christian faction in the Soviet Union and the Bolshevik faction. And I guess the Politburo too, right?
Yes, and out of that you created another subculture, which actually brings into a capitalism into Russia.
Yeah.
Some folks made a fortune.
Yes. Some Russians, you mean?
Yeah, and they don't even ask them, which one are you? tell you whichever one they think you want to hear.
Yeah.
It won't make any difference.
Yeah, those political categories were irrelevant once you get into the virtual economy of the 90s.
Like a Gazprom.
Yes. Yeah, that scandal. So, that's what I was thinking, and you've confirmed it. The Evergreens predict, this is interesting, the Evergreens predicted that the Lemurians would come back in the 21st century. A lot of the Atlanteans were part of the 20th century. And that the Lemurians would come into Russia and reincarnate a lot of them there and bring in a movement towards peace. And so, on some level, I match with what you laid out, with what the Evergreens laid out, and I'm not surprised if Russia becomes, in the long run, very powerful and a relatively good force on the planet. Do you see that?
You might better ask Ian.
Okay. But the thing, so my basic question would be to Ian, like, is the Evergreen's prediction that Russia is by 2020 or 2030 going to be way more powerful than people thought in 1995 when it apparently collapsed, right?
And where, this is to Ian?
No, that's what, yeah, I'm going to ask him that.
Oh, okay.
But you can make an answer if you want to, but.
Presumably that's the case. I don't know how much credit the Lemurians are going to get out of it, but it's okay, whatever you want to call it.
It doesn't mean that they're Lemurians. It's just that those that had met many lives in Lemuria, that consciousness will come in the 21st century, as opposed to the Atlanteans, the people who had been Atlantean souls, reincarnated a lot of them in the 20th century.
I don't know that those souls spoke. When they are no more, are they change? I think they become part of the whole. I don't think they stay Atlantean. I don't think they go to Atlantean heaven or Lemurian heaven, then come back as that. I think they're blended into the whole consciousness, non-physical. So that's a query to me. That's why I said you might check it in, because it's not clear that that's set up that way.
Right. What the Evergreens meant is that those souls that had the experiences of Lemurian had many other experiences. They had many other cultures through the thousands of years, but they're kind of like they all had the Lemurian experience, and I guess not all souls did. And that's what is reincarnating, coming through. They're not Lemurians, limited to that, but
yeah, right.
In that text,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's as plausible as any other thoughtful conclusion. That's right. It has the great potential of being just that way.
Now, what did you talk to the vehicle about a few weeks ago?
We had to get some of the details were the scheduling and how contracts have to flow in order to move the gold to put it so it would not be in jeopardy, to set up a schedule to make sure that the right players were playing, meaning they had the money to convert it back if we were going to pledge those resources for the contract that he had pending.
Right, so he did not ask for you. You showed up and offered your advice.
That's correct, because it was my deal.
Your deal? You mean 20 years ago?
Or yesterday.
Oh, you're still involved.
Still my deal.
Yeah, which is part of my message today. We have to realize that the non-physical is very involved in human matters, so to speak, or physical matters.
If better said, human beings are involved in non-physical deals.
Ah, okay, good. All right, well, that's pretty interesting insight. Fantastic to talk to you. and I guess we could always talk. It's always
yes,
there.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. It's been our greatest pleasure.
And it's been free, and we have no time limit as we had with the Evergreens. That's what's neat.
And that is your wanting.
Thank you. Thank you for helping it.